Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Alexander Gutierrez of APRN, Peter Granitz of APRN, and Angela Denning Barnes of KYUK in Bethel. Thank you for joining us all. Peter, this week the Senate rejected President Obama's gun control proposals. A New York Times writer said, "The attitudes of Americans towards firearms may have changed, but the politics of the Senate have not changed." Tell us more, and especially what Senator Lisa Murkowski and Senator Mark Begich did, their roles in this highly inflammatory debate and discussion.
To be clear, there was no vote on a final bill. These were votes on amendments that would have changed the core of the bill. Obviously, the big one was one that would expand background checks to online sales and close the so-called gun show loophole. It exempted person-to-person sales, but that went down. That was the biggest one. The assault weapons ban went down, and so did one.
And when we say went down, it means they didn't have enough. They had a majority, but they didn't have enough votes.
Right.
In some cases,
they didn't have 60. So technically, this is a filibuster. These were filibusters, and they didn't have the 60 votes to stop debate as it goes in the Senate. So it effectively went down the whole bill because it was deemed worthless in some eyes. And there's also one that would have regulated magazine clips that went down. So Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid pulled the plug and said, "It's not going to go anywhere. I'll keep it alive. It might." But Senators Begich and Murkowski were right on board on all of them. They voted the same way. They were against the assault weapons ban. I think that got 40 votes overall. They were against the expansion to expanding background checks to gun shows and online. And they obviously were against the expanded magazine clips. There's only one Democrat that I can think of, Mary Landrieu from Louisiana, Democrat from a red state, who voted for the expansion. And of the other three, four that are in contentious re-election in 2014, they were with Mark Begich.
And both of our senators said they got lots of mail from home and they were responding to their constituents. That was their argument, essentially. I think if Senator Begich also said some of the things he saw just wouldn't work, as he said.
There was a debate about whether the expansion would be easily implemented in rural Alaska. To do a background check, it would have to be done at a federal firearms licensee, an FFL in Washington speak. And there are not many of those in rural Alaska. If you wanted to get a gun online, you would have to go to a place to get the background check done and then have it shipped there.
I presume those entities exist here in Anchorage.
In Anchorage. I don't know about other places. Certainly in Anchorage. I mean, any gun shows or any gun shop is going to be federally recognized or federally licensed. But they said that those weren't met. And Senator Murkowski came out the day before and said, you do not touch the Second Amendment, that this is too sacrosanct. And but she also said at different times that background checks are not gun control. So she kind of left the door open until the day before. Senator Begich didn't really announce where he was coming until after the fact. But
let me ask you this. The president was clearly quite unhappy, angry, in the press conference or other. He gave a talk in the Rose Garden after the votes were completed. Does that carry over into his relationship with his Democratic colleague, Mark Begich?
I think it does. He was very angry, and that was put together very quickly. These votes were rapid succession. It was one after another. They just went down. And maybe an hour later, the president is out there surrounded by Gabby Giffords and families who have lost loved ones to gun violence in the highly publicized cases. You know, and Senator Begich is never one to shy away when he says he talks to the president on the phone. And he likes to show that he's a powerful senator. And he told me that he was on a 30-minute call with the president a couple days before the vote, getting yelled at. And
that's good for him.
That's
though,
good
right?
for him in Alaska.
Yeah.
It very well could be. So I can't imagine he's going to be getting, an Anwar trade anytime soon.
The president didn't have much time for anything except to yell at a United States senator. I see. Okay. That increases your importance. Alexandra, this was a big, big week in the Alaska legislature in Juneau, the last days of the legislative session. There is so much to discuss, but let's start talking about oil taxes, then move to energy real belt.
Well, to be quite honest with you, it was actually pretty anticlimactic in the end with the two final votes. one way I'd heard this described by Democratic staffers, it was like having a funeral for someone who died 6 months ago. And I guess a corollary for that for supporters of the bill would be like finding out that you're pregnant and then finally having the baby. And I guess what I mean by that is
the assumption was this was going to pass.
I mean, the election pretty much made it a lot easier for Governor Sean Parnell to get a cut for oil taxes down. There was a lot of talk about, well, maybe we could go see the bill go to conference committee, which may kill it. So there was a lot of attention on a couple of swing votes in the Senate, such as Senator Click Bishop from Fairbanks. But they weren't truly swing votes. They always said that they wanted to change the oil tax structure. For Senator Bishop, he said that he wanted to see an annual tax cut of about $500 million a year to $1 billion a year. And he wanted to see something in that sweet spot. And the bill the House gave back to the Senate was in that sweet spot for him.
And after it was over, the Democrats held a press conference in which they, I guess, pretty much said, dark, dark days are ahead. This is the darkest day ever. Some
right.
version of that, right?
We're going to see income taxes. We're going to see our PFD loss. We're going to see our state savings decline. And the fiscal note attached to the bill is, you know, pretty serious. You know, you're looking at about $3.5 billion or more over the next 5 years in revenue to the state that's lost. Now, the problem is we're going to be seeing a shortfall no matter what, even under the current tax structure. But the governor and the supporters of this bill say that, well, this is a short-term thing. We need this to see production ramp up. And the governor has stated that he's envisioning a system where we see four additional rigs added to the North Slope, and that kind of gets us to where we are with ACEs in terms of revenue for the state.
And what about natural gas to Fairbanks by truck? Did pass.
That was a big win for the interior. That's something that they've been wanting an energy relief package for a long time, and they got it. That, along with the in-state gas line, are probably the two big energy projects we really saw go through.
We need to understand the in-state gas line, because it's referred to, first of all, as a small gas line that's 36 inches.
It's not
exactly small.
No.
And second, as I understand it, this doesn't necessarily mean that one's going to be built, or at least anytime soon.
Definitely, there's no anticipation that it'll be built, you know, next year or the year after that. But it will go to open. This gets them to open season sooner rather than later. And you know, there's a lot that still needs to be figured out. We don't know where the terminus is going to be, because that's going to be set according to the marketplace. That's according to the bill sponsors. That was one of their big objectives. That, for the city of Valdez, was a big problem. They want to see a gas line end there.
And that's why Valdez spent most of $1 million opposing House Bill 4.
Exactly.
Right?
But they ended up not getting what they wanted. The Speaker of the House, Mike Chenault, and Representative Mike Cocker, who sponsored the bill, ended up getting it through, and it's been a project of theirs for a while. Now the question is, how much will it really bring down rates, and how quickly will it move, and how will it work with the GEA?
And how much will it cost? I mean, there's a figure of $7 or $8 billion, I believe.
That's correct, but you know, these things can always change.
Okay, let's get Angela in here. Angela, welcome to the show. Bethel is the site of an unusual trial, a subsistence trial, and you've been covering this trial. Tell us about it.
Well, this trial goes back to last summer in June, when subsistence fishermen went out to fish during a state closure. It was a 12-day closure for king salmon specifically, so you couldn't fish with king salmon gear. And you know, I think the communities were okay with that for the first 7 days of the closure. They did it in two parts, and then at the 7-day point, the state announced an additional 5-day closure, and at that point, tribal elders told fishermen in their villages to go fish for their families anyway. So fast forward to now,
how many people were cited?
There were dozens of people cited. Now, some of them pled guilty, And so what we're seeing now are some of the fishermen that pled not guilty. Three of those who pled not guilty were actually convicted in October, but the defense had a different argument going at that time. And back in October, the defense was arguing that the fishermen didn't know about the closures. The notices from the state weren't reaching all of the villages like they should have, and the court found those three fishermen guilty. So the defense decided to change their argument and has been arguing that the fishermen actually have a spiritual connection to the fish, and by that they have a constitutional right to practice their religious beliefs.
I would think that there's quite a bit of law that deals with this question of religious exemptions or religious claims.
Locally it's considered a pretty big trial. The courtroom was packed. There were people out in the hallway sitting on the floor and sitting on benches because they couldn't fit in the courtroom.
And it's not a jury trial, right?
It's not a jury trial. It's a judge trial. And the judge kind of consolidated part of the trial and said, we're going to listen to expert witnesses for two or three days, and then we're going to look at the individual trials. So he didn't consolidate all the 22 fishermen that are still remaining into one. He's going to still have to look at each of those cases separately. But so far this week, what happened was that the expert witnesses were heard both from the defense side and the prosecution, the state.
And there's I would assume that this could set some kind of serious precedent, the religious objections.
There's a lot at stake. I mean, it's bringing up questions about tribal jurisdiction and tribal sovereignty and, if there's a spiritual connection between the fishermen and the resource, you know, how can the state manage that when they're getting data that says the resource is really low, which is what happened last year. The closure came about because the data was showing that this is the lowest run we've ever seen. And even one day, the state was saying, and the federal biologists were saying, even one day could take 10,000 king salmon, which...
And do we have any idea
that.
How long it'll be before the judge rules on this, or before we'll have a decision?
The judge has said that he will have two separate decisions. The first one is, will the state be able to manage with this religious spiritual connection? How can the state manage that? That's supposedly going to come out April 29th in a written decision. And then he's going to look at individual trials starting on May 20th.
Oh, the individual results, yeah.
But that won't be until May 20th.
Okay, thank you very much. Alexandra, advocates of the Kabada, the Knik Arm Toll and Bridge Authority, suffered a surprising setback, and it came in a big hurry.
It did. The brakes really got put on that project in the last week of the legislative session. The House was scheduled to take up a vote on a bill advancing that project a week before the legislature was going to gavel out. They ended up delaying that vote, and that same afternoon, an audit that had been requested, a state audit, came out, and the results were pretty damning. The audit called traffic projections unreasonably optimistic and suggested that the state could be seriously on the hook financially with that audit coming out and not a substantial amount of time to really rework this thing. What ended up happening is the House tried to find a way to kind of scrap the current management of Kabada, put it under the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which is kind of the golden boy of the state right
Dan
now.
Dan Fauske can fix it.
Yes, the Democrats in a press conference that week called him the czar of competence. and he's heard that joke a lot now as far as whether he's going to have business cards.
Hope it doesn't go to his head.
They read that. But even that fix, which would have put the project in the hands of an agency that doesn't want to do uneconomical things, that wasn't enough to get it through this legislative session. The bill sponsors were really opposed to that. And on the Senate side, the Senate president, Senator Charlie Huggins, is from Wasilla, and this was a project that was important to him. So the Senate ended up just not voting on it. And we can take it up next legislature, but we're not seeing that project advance right now.
And how long do you think are they going to bring this back next year and try it again?
Anything's possible, but it's going to be under radically different circumstances. the auditors came out, they were questioned, you know, do you think this is fair? Did you follow proper procedure? And they stand 100% behind it. They said so. And legislators are taking this.
One final question. This is a process question. Many people here in Anchorage follow politics and have a great interest in it. We're really surprised that Mia Costello was such a leading figure in this and thought she had to be getting, if not help, direction, some kind of understanding with the leadership. That essentially a rather new member of the legislature would be taking on something this big. What can you tell us about
that? Well, she is on the Finance Committee, and she has been involved in big pieces of legislation before. As an Anchorage legislator, yes, this affects the Valley, but it also affects Anchorage. Her district has a stake in it, and she works closely with one of the co-chairs of Finance, Representative Bill Stoltz. And she's seen as kind of a moderate member of the majority caucus and a fairly good advocate.
And she has a good education, I know that. Yeah, she's well educated. Okay, Angela, an unusual story from the village of Akiak. A tribal court banishes an Anchorage man from the village on allegations of bootlegging.
That's right.
Tell us more.
Well, the village of Akiak says that they are going to go after alcohol locally. With this particular case, they say that this is a young man from Anchorage who comes into the village several times a year. He has a girlfriend in the village. He visits the village,
presumably he flies in.
Flies in and brings alcohol with him, stays for a few weeks, sells the alcohol, and then the alcohol infiltrates the community. And according to Akiak, alcohol is, they kind of blame alcohol for things like all the domestic violence there and suicides, the high rate of suicide that they see there. So in this tribal court, they got together, they tried to contact the man from Anchorage, who's a 31-year-old named Joseph Miranda. And they tried to contact him by letters, by telephone several times. They put out an ad in a local regional newspaper telling him, we're going to take you to trial. He never responded. And at the actual tribal court trial, you know, he wasn't present. But they banished him anyway, saying, we need him to contact us.
Did they say that, is there any way that he can rehabilitate himself in their eyes? Is there any appeal process here? Or?
According to the tribal court, you know, they're beyond that. They say this has happened many times, and they didn't get what they needed from the state law enforcement. They say they've notified Alaska State Troopers about this particular individual, and nothing's happened, so they wanted to take matters into their own hands.
And is the state of Alaska saying anything in response to this?
Well, the state troopers say they can't. So basically, the tribe says if he does come to our village, we will arrest him with local law enforcement. Now, the Alaska State Troopers say we can't follow that verdict and arrest him.
That jurisdiction, yeah.
That jurisdiction.
Okay. Peter, just about anything Mark Begich does, and he certainly made the news this week on gun control, is seen through the lens of the 2014 election. What do you see, and specifically, what do you see with Joe Miller and Mead Treadwell, his potential opponents?
Those two have formed exploratory committees. Joe Miller just announced on Sunday night on his website that he is going to form an exploratory committee, which is the first step to announcing a candidacy for the Senate. It allows you to raise money without reporting a whole lot of it. People will say test the waters. That means see how much you can make, and if you can make enough that you're comfortable getting to try to take on Mark Begich, who has a lot of money. He raised like some $940,000 the first quarter of this year. It's a good start, and that's after a quarter where he made another million. And he's got $1.5 million cash on hand. So they've both announced this, but it's funny, in Joe Miller's announcement, it didn't say he was running as a Republican. I had to ask him if he was.
He says, did you talk to him in person or on the telephone?
I talked to him on the phone. He actually has a communication shop run out of Baltimore, Maryland. You know, he's had a communications flack for a while. So I set it up with him. I talked to Mr. Miller this week. He says he's going to run as a Republican. I asked if his role in the primary was to move Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell to the right. I think there are some people who would see Mead Treadwell and Mark Begich as fairly similar candidates. But Joe Miller says no. He's in to win the nomination if he gets in. In Lieutenant Governor Treadwell, who was in D.C. this week, he says he was not having fundraisers there. He has met with congressional leaders. He won't say who. He won't say whether he's met with the senatorial campaign committee. Those are the people that would give the blessing to, or could give the blessing to a primary campaign. But we don't know what they're making. But this FEC exploratory committee, it's wonky, but it's important. It lets them gauge how they think they can do. And they can say, you know what, I only raised $250,000. I can't beat the incumbent, but I can use that money.
And this has happened in other states, yeah.
Right, it happens often. But they can use that money to style themselves, you know, a kingmaker and pick a candidate for the House. You know, maybe Mr. Miller thinks that there's a couple of fairly conservative members who are or would-be members who he could support and really move him in and elevate his status.
Candidates frequently like to give you their roadmap to victory. I don't know that Miller gave you his, but what would be his?
I don't know. I don't know. I think Lieutenant Governor Treadwells is fairly obvious that he is going to be the candidate who understands the oil industry in the Arctic better than most. I think that's fairly clear. Senator Begich is going to run on his history in the Senate. He, you know, if you look at his campaign site, it says Senator Mark Begich, independent for Alaska. You have to look to find Democrat, and I haven't found it. He says it's unintentionally misleading. It's not on purpose. One thing that I would say, probably the most important or most interesting person on this would be Senator Lisa Murkowski. She has no love for Joe Miller after their primary campaign, and I can't imagine her supporting him. And I asked, I called their office to see if she'd be willing to comment on this, and you know they said they're working on it, and then they backed up. They don't want her opining too soon.
Okay, thank you very much, Peter. Alexandra, what happened to all those controversial bills, voucher, abortion, photo ID for voters, that made so much news, got so much coverage, but they're still in the legislature?
Well, with Republicans in control of the House, the Senate, and the executive branch, we saw a lot less gridlock. And we did see more bills introduced that really matter to the base, but there isn't universal consensus on these bills, even within the majority caucus. And on the voting bills that you mentioned specifically, there's a pragmatic reason for not necessarily shuttling them out this session. The election isn't for another year. You can deal with school vouchers, which is something that would end up on the ballot in 2014. You could deal with the photo ID for voting thing in 2014 again, because it's not something that's really going to matter until voters go to the ballot box.
And the one thing they know about that is it's going to be litigated.
Right. And on top of it, you know, there are kind of breakdowns within the caucus on those two issues. Native groups have come out very strongly against the photo ID bill because they say it could affect the Native vote. You don't have, you know, a DMV in, say, you know, Falls Pass. Akiak, for example. And, you know, if you lose your photo ID and you don't have your, you know, tribal ID card, you're in a rougher spot than someone who, say, lives in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau, where there are these locations. On the issue of abortion, that ended up stalling kind of at the last in the last week. It passed out of the Senate with kind of a compromise that while we will be restricting Medicaid funding for abortion by coming up with a more narrow definition of medically necessary, we'll also kind of allow for Medicaid funds to go towards family planning services and women's health to kind of reduce the rate of unplanned pregnancies overall. And that allowed some of the more moderate senators to vote for that. In the House, that provision got stripped, but we also had people like Representative Edgman, a Bush Democrat who's part of the majority caucus, say,
right,
hey,
right,
I want to put the brakes on this thing. It's controversial. We need more time for it.
Okay, let's skip ahead here. Angela, the Senate, or at least the Senate and the personified by Lisa Murkowski, came to Bethel to discuss subsistence fishing. This is some way obviously related to your earlier topic. What happened when Senator Murkowski came?
Well, this was a hearing for the U.S. Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, which actually has oversight of subsistence. And so she had a hearing, and it lasted for over 2.5 hours, and it still wasn't enough time to have everybody speak there, but people turned in written testimony. You know, it was very intense. There were some tears shed. And what people were talking about was basically, in a nutshell, they're not happy with the management the way it is. Folks talked about wanting tribal co-management. One guy even said, we don't need the state, let's just have it between the tribes and the federal government. And then people also talked a lot about bycatch, salmon bycatch.
Which is an ongoing problem.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Peter, we have 1 minute left. Congressman Don Young has not been making headlines, or at least not since the wetback remark. What is the latest on the congressman, and what is his relationship with the leadership, particularly Speaker Boehner? You're there in Washington. You get to see these people.
He supports the leadership. He's an old school politician in the sense that you support your party and you get behind them when they need you. So he's that. But Speaker Boehner did force his hand on this. He came out fairly quickly when his racist slur came out and said, Congressman Young needs to apologize. Very quickly, this came out the same week that he surpassed Ted Stevens in longevity in Congress, the same month that he knocks 40 years as well, and also a new investigation, or a reopening of an investigation into him.
And that, as we know by the way Congress works, is going to take some time, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's the next election, past the next election.
And then they'll have to open it up again.
Okay. We're about out of time. Thank you very much for joining us on Alaska Edition. See you right here next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.